Welcome to Car Free Conversations. This is a podcast where we talk about making the most of St. Pete without the use of a car. I'm Domenico.
And I'm Sumitro.
And joining us today is Max McCann, who founded Activate St. Pete. Hi, Max.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming to our show. It's wonderful to have you on and talk about what you guys do over at Activate St. Pete. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself first and what inspired you to start Activate St. Pete?
Sure. Yeah, I grew up in Memphis, Tennessee.
Okay.
In a very car-dependent environment. And I did not have the words for it at the time. And I knew nothing about urban planning and sustainable transportation. I just knew that I couldn't go see my friends whenever I wanted. They were a 20-minute drive away. If I didn't have a car or somebody to drive me, I was stuck at home. And I found that frustrating. Growing up before I could drive, it was even worse than when I could drive and I had a car. I was just working all the time to pay for the car. I knew that, if possible, I wanted to live places where I didn't need a car to get around. After college, I moved to Boston, and then I moved to Chicago. And then I moved to New York. I enjoyed living in these places where you could live either car-free or car-light, and you didn't have to worry about vehicle maintenance, upkeep, insurance costs, tickets, crashes, all kinds of things. To me, it just seemed like common sense. And then we left New York to be closer to my wife's family and ended up living in Tallahassee. And that going from New York to Tallahassee was a little bit of a culture shock, and seeing the way that people used vehicles there and depended on vehicles. I had things like my neighbors would drive to the restaurant at the end of our street, and I found that peculiar. And we intentionally found a place to rent that was near my office, and I would walk to work, and my neighbors would pull up next to me and say, "Do you need a ride?" And I'm convinced they all thought I had a DUI or something because I was walking to work. I'm like, "No, it's nice out. Just going to work. It's good." So it was really in Tallahassee that I first started to dabble in a little bit of advocacy to try to make things better. I connected with Sustainable Tallahassee and did some volunteer work with them. But then moving to St. Pete, it was very eye-opening because there were a lot of other people who also felt the same way that I did. And so then we were able to become a little bit more involved in some of the campaigns that were happening, like some zoning reform issues. And I can't not do this work. That's what it comes down to. It's one of those things where I don't feel like I have to make myself do it. These are the things that I want to do, is try to make the world easier for walking, biking, and transit.
And you came to the right place. I feel like St. Pete's pretty walkable, probably one of the more walkable cities in Florida. Even in the U.S., you could probably say you've got the big cities like New York, Chicago, and some other small cities that are pretty walkable. But it's hard to find walkable cities in general.
Really is.
But there's still a lot more that can be done in St. Pete. And one thing that you mentioned that I think is interesting that I wanted to touch on is you mentioned that on your walk to work, people would stop and be like, "Are you okay?" Mm-hmm. And I think that there's an attitude, right, where if you're not driving, there must be something wrong. Like, you must have gotten a DUI or something, right? And so I had to start adopting, my language had to change, because I had to stop saying, "Well, I don't have a car," or "I walk," and I start using the term, "I'm car free," because it feels like kind of empowering to say I'm car free rather than say, "Well, I don't, I choose not to have a car." It just seems to be, I think there needs to be some work done in the sort of attitudes towards being car free and not being car dependent.
Totally.
And I think even like within St. Pete, like the core city is very walkable.
It is.
But the moment you leave the core city, it becomes kind of difficult to navigate. Like, there are neighborhoods where there are no sidewalks. So if you are walking, you have to walk on the street, you have to share the street with cars and trucks. So there is a lot more work to be done. Mm-hmm. We are definitely like in a better place than we were before.
When I was looking for the place where I live now, I specifically was like, there needs to be a sidewalk. Like, if there's no sidewalk, I can't live there.
Said the same thing.
Same.
It's important, but it's crazy how few sidewalks there are and how much of a challenge it is to get sidewalks put in. Yeah. I mean, just in my neighborhood, we just had a recent sort of little battle with getting a sidewalk restored. Definitely needs to be a priority, I think. So tell us about Activate St. Pete. How does Activate St. Pete advocate for some of that?
Yeah, so we were, my wife and I think you know Christine, we were already doing advocacy work, and we decided to brand as Activate St. Pete just so that there would be a recognizable brand for our efforts. We started off advocating for a little bit of zoning reform in our neighborhood. We wanted parking mandates removed from a new zoning code that the city was passing. And I couldn't figure out why there were parking mandates even in this, because it was close to a Sunrunner stop. And we met with the city a few times, and our neighborhood association was on board with removing parking mandates. Let me back up a little bit. Some people might not know that when you build on a piece of property in most of America and almost all of St. Pete, the city, the municipality is going to require you to build parking on your property even if there's no demand for it. So these are called minimum parking requirements. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's just one of the many ways that our infrastructure builds in car dependency. And so when we saw an opportunity where the city was rezoning a lot of the area near just on the east side of our neighborhood, we thought it was really important that there not be parking mandates, and that instead property owners should have flexibility to build people-oriented places instead of building car-oriented places. And so we developed a little coalition, got our neighbors together, got letters of support, met with the city planning department, and the planning department said, take a hike. We're doing, this is what we're doing. We think we have the votes. So we went to city council with all this, and it turned out the planning department didn't have the votes. We won. We got city council to vote 5-2 to remove parking mandates from this area. And now that's the only place in St. Pete where you don't have to build parking if you don't want to. So hopefully that's not going to be the last area of St. Pete, because now there are other areas that are being rezoned for to accommodate Sunrunner transit-oriented development. But that was one of the first campaigns that we ran. A lot of what we'll do is drafting email campaigns to local elected officials for a specific project. We'll draft a mail-to link that makes it real easy for people to just click on the link, and it populates an email and sends it off to people. We had a really successful campaign for the Cross Bay Ferry when it looked like some of the PSTA board members weren't going to support that. And so we generated something around 200 emails that went to the inboxes of the board members. And it turns out when it came to a vote, it was unanimous. All the board members supported it after seeing that kind of public support. It turns out really loved Cross Bay Ferry.
You say that emailing elected officials does work?
I think so. I think it does. Public, in-person public comment is always going to be the best. Seeing the people come, because you have to really be committed to do public comment. But I'd say the second best thing is an email. I don't really do petitions. I feel like I'd rather somebody get 200 emails in their inbox than see 200 names on a petition. I just think it's more effective, and they have to engage with that and have to delete it or archive it or something. Just it seems like it jumps out more to me, and it's not any harder to do an email campaign than an online petition.
I agree. I think petitions are good when you just want to show support for something that is kind of already in favor, right? Yeah. You know, like when you're trying to push something and you're saying, okay, look, you're applying for a grant. You're saying, oh, look, all these people in the neighborhood support this. But you're right. I think if you're trying to really enact change, or you're really trying to change someone's opinion, I don't think petitions are as effective.
Well, I think also seeing an email in your inbox is very different than seeing someone's signature on a petition. Mm-hmm. There are like two very different things.
I have been to city council where council members have quoted emails that they've gotten. You know, like I have gotten these emails from people, and I quote, and they'll just quote an email that they've received. So it must have an impact.
And the email gives the sender an opportunity to create a unique message in there too, which you don't have on a petition. And I think that helps, because a lot of the projects that we're trying to do you could come at them from so many different angles. Let's say we're trying to pedestrianize a block of central downtown, okay? That's going to be better for street safety. That's going to be better for air quality. That's going to be lower noise generated on that block. It's going to be probably better for storm runoff because now you've got space for bioswales and things like that. It's going to be better for businesses mm-hmm. along there because now you've got more foot traffic. There's so many different ways that you can approach these projects, and that's what's great is you can give people space to say the reason why they support it because it might be totally different from the reason you support it.
Do you have some projects in mind that you want to take up through Activate St. Pete?
Yes. The city is drafting the zoning overlay for the rest of the Sunrunner corridor, mm-hmm. and it's long overdue. Listen, y'all, we've had the Sunrunner for 3 years now, and it's illegal to build transit-oriented development along the Sunrunner corridor. You still have to include parking, even if you're right next to a Sunrunner stop. Mm-hmm. And it's, by the way, it's illegal to build a restaurant in the Sunrunner corridor. Did you know that? Yeah.
What?
Yeah. It might just be west of 34th Street.
Okay.
And then south, it's illegal.
Yeah. You can't build a freestanding restaurant. There are some that are grandfathered that have been there a long
like
time.
Like Bo and Moe's. And
yeah, maybe Dead Bob's, I think, was okay. in the corridor. Uh-huh. But that's why it's all law firms and chiropractors out there.
I see.
There's not much else you can do. So our zoning is really restrictive there. I'd say this should have been done years ago. We should have legalized more compact pedestrian scale development, and then ridership would be higher on the Sunrunner yeah. today. Number one thing you hear people criticizing about with the Sunrunner is ridership is low. Nobody takes it. Lanes are only used once
Which
in 15 minutes.
I mean, I took it this morning. It was packed. The last time I took it, it was also packed. So yeah. I don't know. I mean, that's anecdotal. It's probably that later on in the day after work, it's probably used less, which kind of makes sense. But I think that the criticisms of the Sunrunner not having ridership is weird.
Yeah, it gets
being used. I see it being used. So.
It gets between 2,500 and 3,000 riders per day, which is it's good. It's usually one of the highest ridership routes for the PSTA. Mm-hmm. It's also the least subsidized of any route that the PSTA has. But it could be 5,000. There's capacity on it to be 5,000 a day. And you know what? If it was 5,000 or 6,000 a day, I don't think we would have lost the dedicated lanes in Pasadena.
Mm. I don't think it had to do with ridership, Max. Yeah, I think that had to do with something else.
It's easier for people who don't take the Sunrunner to accept that it has a dedicated lane when you can see that it's potentially taking 5,000, 6,000 cars off the road every day. And when, all right, you take that lane out and now traffic gets worse, then I think that's going to be easier for them to swallow. But who knows? I don't have a crystal ball. I can tell you one thing, though. Serious crashes are going to go up along that corridor. We're going to see that, and we're going to have good data for that.
Well, this is the lane that you're talking about that was removed. It's not in St. Pete. St. Pete Beach, right?
No, it's in Pasadena.
Oh, Pasadena.
On Pasadena Boulevard.
Some of it is in St. Pete. Okay. Pasadena Avenue, right?
Right, on Boulevard or whatever.
Yeah, and I think some of it, I think it's in St. Pete, but it's a state road. That's why FDOT could do it. And it didn't require city input. So Pasadena Avenue is a state road. Mm-hmm. Hmm. And we know it was a political decision, not because of safety or data or congestion or anything like that. It was purely political in Tallahassee.
So we've talked about some of the things that Activate does, some of the initiatives that you have. How would you sum up the mission of Activate St. Pete for people that are new to it?
We are trying to make it safer and easier to walk and bike and take transit. Another way to say that is we're creating livable streets. Vibrant communities. You could come at it from a lot of different angles. Safer streets is a big part of it for me. Another part of my motivation we haven't really talked about is creating a transportation system where kids can travel freely and safely without having to get shuttled around in the back of a car like an invalid. And frankly, where the parents don't have to be chauffeurs, you know. But that was my childhood was I wasn't really free to go where I wanted to go. And I think kids deserve that. And I think it's really empowering. And I think it's important for their development when they can travel freely like they can in a lot of other countries. And they can't do that here.
it's a cost savings too, right? Yeah. For taxpayers, if we can trust our transportation system to carry students to school and we don't have to create a separate bus system for them, I mean, that's a huge cost and huge strain on the education system is how we literally have a transit system just to get kids to and from school. It's a huge cost.
How old each of you were when you first kind of traveled anywhere by yourself without your parents?
Oh, by myself.
By walking, by biking?
Well, you know, I grew up in a pretty dense urban area.
And so did I.
And my grandmother lived around the block, around the corner. And so I probably was maybe 10 or 11 because it was such a short walk, you know, that I remember taking that walk a few times. And that does, like Max said, it does empower you and gives you the confidence that I can do this, you know. It felt very safe. I left my house. I got to my grandma's. And my grandma called my mom saying that I was home. I feel like I had that sort of infrastructure set up. I mean, you could do that here too in St. Pete, but I don't know if it's as common.
Yeah, I think I would go to school with friends when I was like 10 or 11 because my school was 10 or 15 minutes walking distance from home. Mm-hmm. And because we were all in this group of like, oh, all the students are walking.
My sister,
that
was my sister actually when we moved to Florida. She went to elementary school that was like maybe a quarter mile, maybe mm-hmm. half a mile away from our house, and she would walk home with her friends.
Right.
Another layer of safety.
Yeah, for me, probably 8, I could travel around my neighborhood freely, mm-hmm. but all my friends, I was going to school in Midtown for junior high. And so that was a 20-minute drive. I couldn't go see my friends if I didn't have a ride. So that was frustrating. But yeah, ever since I was probably 8 or 10, traveling around my neighborhood freely. And I remember it feeling that part of it feeling good, but I shouldn't have had to be limited to my neighborhood mm-hmm. like that.
I'm hoping that when I have kids, I'll be able to give them the freedom to walk around without having to worry about them getting hit by a car or something.
It's also like, I think people who haven't lived in a denser urban area or who just don't have the exposure of people walking in the street are so angry when you confront them when you're crossing the sidewalk, and they're so angry that you're delaying them for by like few seconds.
When they're in the car and they're trying to drive.
Yeah.
They're probably also the same people that are afraid to walk places, mm-hmm. right, for a number of reasons.
Yeah.
You know, who knows what their reasons are. But I do think that there's that anxiety of walking places where because it feels so safe. I mean, I have a neighbor, and he moved to my neighborhood a long time ago, and maybe it felt less safe for him when he moved. But he said, I live in Roser Park, and he moved to one of the historic homes in Roser Park, and he said that he didn't even know that there was a creek for like 6 months. And when I tell you it's so weird because from his front door, I feel like I could see the creek.
Right.
He's like, I didn't know there was a park or a creek or anything until like 6 months because I would just always get in my car, drive to work, and then come back and immediately go straight to my house. Like I didn't even linger. And so, you know, it's very strange behavior, but I don't think it's uncommon, you know.
Right.
I think we've, in this country, we've gotten so dependent on cars that it gives you this false air of safety, even though the automobile accidents are like the leading cause of deaths.
Totally. Listen, I say this all the time. Around Halloween, parents get uptight about somebody putting drugs in their candy, but the real threat by far is having their kid get hit by a car.
Yeah.
They don't think twice about putting their kid in a car and driving an hour to go to grandma's house, which is probably the most dangerous thing they're going to do.
Statistically.
Yeah. Car crashes are, depending on the year and how you measure it, either the number one or number two cause of death of kids in mm-hmm. the U.S.
Well, that's why Halloween on Central, which Car Free St. Pete started mm-hmm. and is now run by
Edge,
Grand Central and Edge District, a wonderful event. It's wonderful because it shows you what life could be like if you didn't have to worry about cars, right, when you're trick-or-treating. So they close off portions of Central Avenue so children and adults can walk freely in the street and trick-or-treat at the different locations. And I think it's just so wonderful because you don't have to worry about getting hit by a car. And I think the initial intention of that was to show, look what Central could be like if we had more days like this where you didn't have to worry about cars, or if it became less car dependent.
Yeah, and also like just give people just a glimpse into like what car-free living could look like, yeah. Right? Like we also need more people to get on board, mm-hmm. like kind of live car light, if not car free, so that, you know, we are just taking them off the road.
Yeah.
If we can.
And I feel like over the past several years, Central Avenue has become more pedestrian friendly than it used to be. I have noticed less cars using it, probably because they're frustrated because how slow they go on Central, you know, but there is First Avenue North and South that go pretty fast.
Yeah.
So there's no need to. And I really like that. I really enjoy walking down Central all the way into the Grand Central District. And I do think that events like Halloween and Central should take some of that credit.
Yeah, I agree. How can people get involved with Activate St. Pete?
Yeah, just visiting our website and signing up for our mailing list. It's activatestpete.org. And we do most of our communication by email when it comes to campaigns, but we also post things on our socials. We're active on Facebook and a little bit less so on Instagram, but we're present there. That's a good way to get in touch. By the way, another fun thing we do is a monthly bike to school event for Perkins Elementary mm-hmm. and Sanderling K-8. Everybody's welcome to join us for that. It's usually on the first Friday of the month, but with the holidays, our January event is this Friday on the 9th. And we leave from Pete's Bagels on First Avenue South and go south on 22nd Street. And we've been getting like 30 or 40 people on these rides. It's a lot
That's
of fun.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's a good time. And kids on bikes, like we talked about earlier, feeling empowered, showing up to school, ready to learn. It's a great time.
And Perkins and Sunderland, they're on 22nd Ave South.
Perkins is on 18th Avenue South, and Sanderland is on 22nd Avenue South. Yeah, so we hit Perkins first. Some of the kids drop off, and then we go to Sanderland and pull in there.
I want to just jump in here because if you are listening to this on Radio St. Pete, Sunshine 96.7 FM, WLMX, you can continue this conversation with us by logging into RadioSt.Pete.com and looking for the Car Free Conversations podcast. You can also find it anywhere you listen to podcasts. Let's continue. You also are involved with PSTA.
That's correct. I'm a PSTA board member. I'm the citizen representative of St. Petersburg. So St. Petersburg gets to appoint city council members to the PSTA board, but they also appoint one citizen representative, and that person is appointed by city council. So that's me. I applied for that. And surprisingly, I think 11 other people also applied. So a lot of people wanted this job that didn't pay anything, surprisingly. Ultimately, city council selected me. And so I've been on that board for, I think, a little bit over a year now. But that's really interesting to see the inner workings of the bus network here.
Yeah. I'm really glad that you're in that position because I do know that there have been some anti-transit advocates, I suppose you call them, that have been trying to get involved in some of those decision-making roles. I don't understand why you would volunteer so much time to dismantle something you care nothing about. I personally don't understand that mentality, but I do understand caring so much about something that you want to make it successful, and that's what you're doing. So I thank you for doing that work for rest of us. So because I ride transit, and for everybody else who rides transit, I thank you for that work that you're doing. How can someone get involved in PSTA and supporting PSTA without being a board member like yourself?
Showing up and giving public comment is huge at the monthly board meetings that the PSTA has, because I think there's a tendency for some of the board members to just look at dollars on a spreadsheet. That's what the transit system is to them. And so it's critical that they get reminded that these are humans that are going to work, going to doctor's appointments, going to school, living their lives using our transit system and the societal benefits that come from that. I firmly believe our economy couldn't run without the PSTA. I think it would grind to a halt. But it's tempting for people to just look at the bottom line, right, the number on a spreadsheet for our budget and say, oh, that's too much. But any time people come and give public comment, it's helpful. It really is. It's a game changer.
I think it's those emotional sort of appeals, yep, that I think people get,
yeah,
that really change people's minds. Because when you have somebody that cannot drive and they depend on the transit system and they show up and say, if you cut this funding, I won't be able to get to my mother's house or to work or get my kids to school or whatever, I think that's what really matters. And those are the voices that I think we need to hear more of, because I've attended some hearings and there are a lot of good arguments as to why we need transit. I can make arguments till my face is blue, but the most powerful arguments are, you know, the person who is wheelchair bound that cannot drive a car, you know, the person who has lived in St. Pete their entire life and has never owned a car and does not want to own a car or cannot drive. Those stories are really impactful. So if you're listening and you're one of those people, it is important that you make your voice heard, because your story is, it really does matter, even to the people that don't like transit or the people that don't care. Once you tell your story, it's really hard for them to say, well, you know, what are they
going
to say? Right. Like, what are they going to say when somebody says, I need this? You know, what are they going to say? Well, sorry. If it's someone who truly needs that service, I think it's really hard to turn that down.
I also feel like we have really just lost the plot if we have to make these personal appeals in order for people in decision-making roles to care for transit. It's just let people use whatever mode of transportation, right, that they want. It's available. It's what a big urban area is supposed, right, to have.
Right. You invest a certain amount in our toll roads.
Right.
You invest a certain amount in the bus system.
Right.
And all the other systems. Like, right, it's just a part of managing a city,
right,
like you said.
Exactly. I find it really frustrating that to no end that we have to fight tooth and nail,
yeah,
in order to just keep what we have.
Yeah.
Forget about even improving it, right? Just to even keep the PSTA at the level that it is right now.
Yeah.
It really frustrates me.
It is, but it's important. And one day I, yeah, think that we'll get to a point where we can start making really big,
yes,
improvements,
right,
to what we have.
One thing that's frustrating about these fights is that for PSTA and for our budget, we have to do this every year.
Right.
Every year, y'all, there's a fight. People that want to drastically cut funding. And it gets exhausting. And like you said, we shouldn't have to do that. I think one of the points that's lost on a lot of people is it's easy to look at how much public transit costs. It's harder to look at how much,
like, economic impact,
much the,
yeah,
benefits are.
Right.
And it's hard to look at the costs of a car-dependent transportation system.
Mm-hmm.
Because even just totaling up what we spend on roadway maintenance for cars, that's difficult to do. It's not in one place. Mm-hmm. Some of it comes from the state. Some of it comes from the federal government. Some of it's local. And then how do you factor in the public health crisis,
yeah,
that's caused,
right,
by a car-dependent,
right,
transportation system? If you quantify that, transit's a drop in the bucket, and it's an investment. It's not an expense. That's what I believe.
And I think in general, most people lack the long-term vision, right, that is required to understand why the investment is important now, which we see that in other parts of the city, right? Like, we didn't invest enough money in our stormwater management,
right,
you know, 20, 30 years ago. And now here we are in a literal crisis where people's homes are being flooded annually. The streets are flooded all the time. And I do believe that it's because of a sort of short-sightedness from our predecessors. And I think that the same could be said possibly for transit. If we don't truly invest and think long-term, someday we will be running into a crisis where there will be gridlock traffic, there will be health problems, there will be a lot of issues that are coming out where people cannot get to work, cannot get around, and the economy won't be as thriving as it could be. I agree with you that it takes a long-term vision to understand the benefits of things. So that's why we have to keep talking about these,
yep,
issues.
I agree.
And is there anything else you want to say about PSTA, how people can get involved before we sign out?
Yeah, well, one thing I'll mention, we were talking about the zoning reforms along the Sunrunner corridor. Right now, the city hasn't come out with its draft of the plan yet. We don't know what it's going to be. But the last word we got from the planning department was that they're still going to have parking mandates in that zoning overlay. And so that's what we're gearing up for right now, because that would be a terrible mistake, yeah. is to require parking on parcels where there's no demand and where you have an opportunity to create an environment that incentivizes transit, mm-hmm. as opposed to incentivizes driving. We're gonna go all in on that if the city tries to put parking mandates in there. So look out for a campaign from us if the city does go that route. We still don't know, but that's a whole nother frustration, is just how long this is taking. So yeah, we firmly believe that there should be flexibility for parking, especially because we're going to have autonomous vehicles soon. Yeah. Why are you requiring people to have space for a car that's going to sit there parked 95% of the time? It just doesn't make sense. So yeah, it's antiquated, it's backwards looking. Cities all over North America are removing parking mm-hmm. mandates completely, and we're stuck in the past. St. Pete should be leading the charge on this. We should be at the forefront of it. And instead, we're getting passed by cities like Birmingham, Alabama, that removed parking mandates completely. And we're still stuck in the past. There's no reason for that.
Well, if you live in a neighborhood near a Sunrunner stop or a major transit stop, and you want to help advocate for more dense building in that area, connect with Activate St. Pete. You guys are on Facebook, right? Do you have a website?
We don't really do a newsletter. We just run email campaigns when there's a reason to reach out to people. But we do have a website.
I get your emails. I just assumed that they were newsletters. But you're right. You really only email out when there's something important yes. to say or a way to get involved, which right. is why signing up for your newsletter is such a good thing to do, because it allows people to voice their opinion and get involved when it's needed.
And there's one cool thing we have on the website, activatestpete.org. We have a calendar that you can subscribe to, and it'll add events to your Google calendar. So you could see, okay, there's a meeting downtown to talk about development or something. Mm. Some of them are activism opportunities, and some of them are just fun little markets, like the distillery has their maker's market right off the Pinellas Trail. So it'll be a mix of those kind of events, but that's a cool way to stay involved and to know what's going on in St. Pete.
That's very cool. Thank you so much, Max, for coming on and talking to us about Activate St. Pete and some of the more important transit and non-automobile dependent activities that are going on.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. I think you're doing great work for all of us, so I really thank you for that as well.
Thanks, my pleasure.
You're listening to Car Free Conversations on Radio St. Pete, 96.7 FM. If you want to hear more of our conversations, please go to RadioSt.Pete.com and also wherever you get your podcasts. You can connect with Connect Pinellas at connectpinellas.org or on Instagram and Facebook under Connect Pinellas.